So that's where I struggle. I'm struggling right now because I'm not seeing outside of, you know, a composite score of 1.6 being on the low side of that. Everything else that we've been discussing, I'm trying to line up in my mind.
I think it comes down, you know, they might have assets. We don't have, as a board, we don't have legal recourse to that. Should something happen, with a bond, we do. That can go straight into strife and such like that. You know, we have seen school closures that had some assets, but we didn't see any of it. And where you can see today, we're still approving strife funds out of there. So that, to me, is my dread. I agree. I don't think they're in a ton of trouble either. You know, like I said, notice is notice. You know, so.
But to me, the argument about assets is that most of the assets are long-term assets, so they're tied up in plant and equipment, buildings, and so forth. And so it's not as if we could ask you to sell those to try to, you know, help students recover. That's very long-term. It's not anything what would you do? Sell the building? I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen, so it's sort of, you know... It's moot, but in that scenario, you'd end up with, after everybody was paid, there would still be money available.
I think part of the thing is that the way that the rules are, if the school should close, which obviously we're not anticipating that, but we weren't anticipating some others closing either, if the school closes... even if the school has assets, they are not obligated to give 100% refund to the students. And if the students don't transfer somewhere else, they can apply to the bond and then to the strike fund to get a reimbursement for everything they've paid to you. So the bonds are protection for us that, you know, should you take your assets and go home, we can help the students. So we end up being torn between, you know, you have a loss, which is a bad thing. You have decent assets, which is a good thing. You've been around for a long time, which is a good thing. Just trying to weigh it all,
sure,
and understanding that, you know, none of us like to waste money. So it probably feels too like it's a waste of money to have insurance through this bond. And to us, it's a, you know, help us sleep at night that we're protecting students. And as we explained to the other school, it's not just your students. If your school, sure, should fail, it impacts all of the potential, you know, physical health of all the students in our state. So that is our point.
Okay. Madam Chair, I appreciate that. I know I can see you're wrestling in many ways with this, because there are some very different factors in our case than some of the other scenarios that you have looked at. And I guess, you know, from the standpoint of expectation, when there's been a practice that you need 2 years of negative, and when there's an understanding, if you look at our last 3 years, we're net positive, it's difficult for us to understand why this is now being added to our cost of doing business when it hasn't been before.
Unfortunately, so, because of the history of other schools, but one option that we had is to, after doing the math, to determine if we want to do a further reduction. So if we try to apply a little bit of fancy logic, if it was 1 year of loss, and we're kind of looking at two, then cutting it in half and doing 50%, would that give any comfort?
Yeah,
right. You mean cut the bond?
Yeah, so set up it was
50%
to 300,000.
Because you have as for lack of a better word, argument, you have the strong, you have the strong.
You have a strong.
You don't want to say strong. They have a good composite score. They have good, like you said, current ratio, although that doesn't make that much and wouldn't help us in the long run. But I mean, and that they're on notice instead of
probation.
I mean, you have mitigating or extenuating circumstances to justify the reduction.
I would be comfortable with 300,000.
see.
Would you be comfortable with the $300,000?
Obviously, we would. Any reduction would be a positive thing, again, because of the cost that's going to be involved for us in next year's budget that we were not anticipating related to having to purchase this bond. So we would welcome any reduction. I do need to talk to my board of trustees. We have a self-governing board and get their input, but I would appreciate your consideration of that factor.
Okay. Any other further discussion? All right. Make a motion to offer a revised consent agreement with a bond requirement of $300,000. And they will send you the consent agreement, and you will have 20 to 30 days to reply.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I seconded the motion.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Oops.
Well, they couldn't agree.
I was going to say lunch didn't do much good.
They did say they agreed.
They agreed.
Yeah.
Well,
they
said they would take it to the board.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot what happened 3 seconds ago. Yeah.
All right. All right, the next item is regular degree granting license renewal for Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. And simultaneous with that, so you don't have to jump up and down, review of financial status, Department of Denial of Application Participation, and Title IV programs for Hahn University. Hello. You would introduce, no, Ms. Stanford.
Madam Chair, members of the board, at your meeting last month, the board postponed action on the 2017 regular degree granting and vocational program license renewal for HASON, and the board had concerns with the application for HAN and the Title IV denial, and how the two would be related with each other. The board also at that point in time had requested that the owner, Mr. John Doo, be present to answer the questions of the board. Also provided to you, provided all the other information from last time, but also provided to you the quarterly statement that we received for HAN, so we wouldn't have to do HAN, might as well do it. Wouldn't have to do HAN at the Finance Committee in June. Mr. and Mrs. Hewitt. Who?
No, not what.
Uh-oh.
We'll introduce.
Okay, never mind.
My name is Alex Holland, and I'm the president of Hahn University of Traditional Medicine and the Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine.
My name is Adrian Hall. I'm a board member of ASOM and legal counsel for both.
I'm John Hu, who's owner of the Arizona School and University.
Jennifer Huang, I'm an immigration attorney here in Tucson. Oops.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'd like to recuse myself.
Would someone like to make a statement?
Yeah, I'd like to just kind of start off thank the board for allowing us to all sit up here together and represent both schools, because both schools, as you know, have been intertwined. With the original intent was to have both schools merge together so there would be one school in Tucson. And the intent was first to have the Arizona School merge with Hahn University. That was predicated upon Hahn University receiving federal financial aid, which we did not achieve. So as a result of that, we've had to modify our strategy for how the two schools are going to be working together. So currently, we have developed a strategy that they will remain separate, that the Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, which can offer federal financial aid, will continue to do their 3- and 4-year programs. One master's level of acupuncture, the other master of acupuncture and oriental medicine. They are the federal financial aid school in a sense. Han University will focus on doing what's we're calling, it's like a graduate level 1-year program for individuals who are coming in from outside the United States, from China. We have a person who's applied from Portugal. And the idea being that or people who come into the state of Arizona who need to get licensed and they don't have enough credits or whatever. So this basically separates the functions of the two schools. Han University does not offer federal financial aid. Students who come from China or Portugal pay for their education themselves. So in a sense, we're offering a 1-year program for people from China and other countries to get a master's level degree. Because in China, you can go to school for 5 years and get a bachelor's degree. Many people in China want to come to the United States to get a master's because it looks good on their resume. So the idea is we have developed a program approved by ACOM where we can offer a 1-year degree program. Basically, to get a degree from a program, you have to go to that school for 1 year, 1 academic year. So that is the strategy. So the two schools will be offering different strategies and the outcomes of the education. And that's kind of where we are at this point in terms of maintaining the integrity of both institutions, but having them not necessarily continually teach the same things. Currently, we also have 8 students at Han University. By the end of fall quarter, maybe the end of winter quarter 2018, all those students will have graduated. And any new students coming into the school will be doing that 3-year program, none of whom will be required under financial aid. And you can finish the program within 1 year. So that's the strategy that we have developed over the last few weeks. So we have brought people together here to hopefully answer questions that you may have regarding that strategy, finances of the two schools, even 5, whatever you would like to ask us.
Wasn't part of the Han financial issue, Title IV issue, because of the citizenship thing? Is that what was going on?
No, I think the main thing was having this 2 schools owned by the same individual. It's not a citizenship thing. I think it's more than anything that the 2 schools were owned by one individual.
But I think the issue was if they don't get funding, his visa could be in jeopardy.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it was, wasn't it?
So the way this works out is John has invested close to $2.5 million in this entrepreneurial endeavor to help establish a foothold for him and his family in the United States. John, even if he doesn't get the EB-5, and he can tell you this, he's not planning on going back to China and never returning. He has invested and he will continue to invest in this entrepreneurial endeavor so that it'll work. So whether he gets the EB-5 or not is almost moot in terms of his commitment to the schools.
Will you be reapplying or you're just never going to go for Title IV?
We're just not going to go for Title IV. I mean, I agree with what the Department of Education had to say. It's kind of like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that's our same issue. It's really hard to separate you guys.
Yeah.
Building, and you're the campus president for both.
Yeah,
and it just,
which is why we're trying to separate them now out in terms of
right. Degree
programs.
So then the question begs is, if you're not going to get Title IV for Han, will Mr. Hu's financial backing still be there? That's the concern.
I think if you,
John,
so
would you like to address that? Financial backing? You're willing to continue financially back the schools?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, there's no issue.
In the letter from the Department of Ed, when they denied your eligibility, they had said that Han is not, in fact, an independent post-secondary institution. So when you come back up for renewal for the other school, are they going to find you to not be an independent institution because you're having a non-Title IV institution still? The housing is still exactly the same. It's just that one is has non-Title IV programs and one has Title IV. So
how I guess the only way I can really respond to that is that the Department of Education knew the situation with Han University and the Arizona School of Agricultural Medicine when they recertified us last year. We are coming up again for recertification, I believe it is in June of 2018. So they knew the situation then. If it's a red flag, it seems to me they should have caught it then and done some kind of action. But apparently it wasn't an issue for them. So that's the only thing we can go on.
I guess it's just concerning, though, it's the very first issue that they mentioned in their reason for not to approve Han University was the fact that it wasn't independent. So I guess that doesn't, the fact that it wasn't on their radar a year before, but it's certainly on their radar now. Have they had any conversations with you about health concerns?
No, we have not heard anything.
What is it? They're saying on page 2, it says, for purposes of eligibility for participation in Title IV programs, the department does not allow commonly owned institutions to share space. So you're still going to be doing that, although they're not both Title IV entities. I have no idea. The point that I'm worrying about is the viability of the school. It sounds like you've solved part of the problem for sure, but I think that we don't have the knowledge base to know whether in doing that you've shored up the one school, but potentially the other school remains in potential jeopardy, because it seems like the department has an issue with all of the commingling.
And we haven't heard anything from the department. So if they have an issue, I'm assuming that they would have notified us, or they will be notifying us, but I just don't know what the Department of Education is going to do. But I think that since they knew the situation and they went ahead and certified the Arizona school, that is an indication of where they're going to go, and they're going to see what we do in relationship to this current situation. And so we've started to make some plans and separate things out and changed how we're addressing these kinds of issues, and it's still an ongoing process.
And is the signage resolved that you can tell that really is two schools?
Yes. We have an Arizona school sign on the school itself, and we have a Han University sign out on the street.
So. Are they still sharing the same space?
Yes.
But if you use it, I think it's prior before you went to board, they presented pictures for the Arizona school that all looked like they were just submitting things for Han, and I was left very confusing in what school licensing here. I couldn't tell.
We could send you photos of the Arizona school signs if you'd like. We could do that. There's no problem.
Madam Chair, I've been by the school, and there's no ambiguity there.
You can tell. You can clearly tell it's
two. You can tell there's two distinct entities.
Can I follow up on our chair's comments? And so the fact that the Department of Education hasn't made the same case for the Arizona school that they did for Han University is either intentional, good luck, bad luck. It's kind of, nobody really knows what meaning you could discern from that. It would seem like in addition to sharing space, sharing staff, we pointed out at the last meeting that there are loans and receivables from one institution to the other. And so clearly there's commingling of funds between the two institutions. And so one of the reasons that we appreciate you being here, Mr. Hu, is that it begs the question, why have two schools if the existence of two is potentially jeopardizing both institutions? So if the Arizona school is eligible for Title IV, that doesn't mean that the Arizona school couldn't run a program for foreign students from any country. And so it begs the question, why isn't there just one school? Basically, the Arizona school.
Can I address that? I mean, that's the crux of the issue, obviously. And the problem, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, is that when Mr. Hu, with Ms. Wong's help, filled out the EB-5 visa application materials, Mr. Hu hadn't acquired the other school yet. And so all the processing with customs and immigration people is with Han University, and it's not possible to midstream say, oh, wait a minute, we've actually expanded our investment and our footprint by acquiring this other more stable institution. You can't go back to zero and start over again without really starting the clock back several years. So we've tried to do is accommodate the Department of Education, the Arizona State Board of Private Post-Secondary Education, and the Immigration Service in keeping all these balls in the air. And it hasn't been easy or seamless, and we recognize that. But what we're here to try to do is, I guess, most importantly, I think there's plenty of objective evidence that the Arizona school is on a good financial footing at this point. And the question really is, what do we do with Han University? And from our standpoint, well, we need to keep Han University alive without jeopardizing the Arizona school to the extent that we can, and fulfilling whatever obligations or all the obligations we have to the current Han students and future Han students. And that involves reducing the exposure of new students by not accepting U.S. national students necessarily, or anybody who's going to go through more than this one-year program. So it makes Han a more versatile entity whose existence, we hope, can be maintained until Mr. Hu and Ms. Wong can satisfy Customs and Immigration Service that he's made the appropriate investment and met the requirements for him to get his green card. If that doesn't happen, then the question becomes, what do we do with Han University? And it's probably it disappears, and we just operate the other school.
I think our challenge is that it, just like you said, it's all mixed in together. So, I mean, it'd be different if, to me, the spaces were completely separate and budgets weren't moving back and forth. But if that continues to happen, we don't know who we're approving. We don't know what we're committing to, because these guys have moving parts all over the place, and this is the most confusing thing I've ever seen.
We mentioned the commingling, and, you know, I've been on this board for numerous years, and we've talked about this a long time. I guess my concern is I would like to see a decoupling plan, something a little more both operationally and fiscally comparatively to that, you know, because it is really hard for us to wrap our heads around that they're two separate things. I mean, especially when you share so much operational thing. And my thing with that, Alex, is not to create an undue burden. I know that finances is a thing like that, but infrastructure has been an issue at the Arizona school for a while too, and you added a lot of stuff there over the years and such. So I would be more, I'd like to see some type of concrete decoupling plan, you know, if that makes sense.
That's true.
The program that is...
That's not saying... Sorry, one more thing. That's not saying that I don't applaud what you're trying to do with Han. That's good, and I think that is a little bit of a safekeeper if you just say, no, U.S. nationals, go here, you know, that way, because then there is no Title IV question that ever could arise from that, so I think.
So the program at Han that is not offered with Arizona?
Currently not, but if there were students at Han University who are in the second quarter of their one-year program, four quarters, and something were to happen to school, they could transfer to the other school and get those same kinds of classes. So they would just transfer. Even though it's not its own program, they share many, many of the same components of what any school in the U.S. is required to graduate a student from a TCM school. It's a mechanism of keeping Han viable while we go through the EB-5 process.
But we get that you want to do that. We're literally trying to figure out how to unknot this string.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you figured out something that appears to be viable for the one, but we're not really sure that it's not further jeopardizing the other.
If Mr. Hu is willing and committed to stay in the United States forever, raise your kid, whole kit and caboot, why not just start and simplify it? That way, combine the faculty, have the programs all in one, and become a solid, strong
it's financial institution. Because of the EB-5 issue.
I'm saying start over. It's 2 years.
Starting EB-5 is over. Somebody's gone through this with employers. This is a long, complicated immigration law. It's nuts.
One significant issue that occurs to me.
Isn't this all under the bridge, though?
You could start something new. You have to buy something, invest his money.
You not only start a new clock, you start back from zero with your dollars.
Yeah, it's not
you
a...
You have to invest
and create...
You don't have another $1 million?
But we have acquired a different the business.
Yeah. Check in another $1 million.
So, I mean, to boil it down, I believe that it comes down to the question of, on the one hand, for Mr. Hu, the... One scenario is to have to start the clock over, start the investment over, another $1 million, another X number of years, hardship on you. The other path is to continue, as you've proposed right now, at the risk, however, which we don't know what the risk is, at the risk that the Arizona school jeopardizes its Title IV funding, which probably makes both institutions unviable at that time. So then you have two institutions that fail. Tucson has no acupuncture program. The students who are left do not have a place unless they were to come to Phoenix to go to Pima Institute of Herbal Medicine and Acupuncture. The question really is, given the two scenarios, given that our responsibility is to protect the students, and with all due respect to Mr. Hu, your investment and commitment to acupuncture and to acupuncture education to the city of Tucson is laudable, but that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to make sure that the students who are currently enrolled, that the state fund is protected and that there remains some kind of viable future for acupuncture education in Tucson is the third. And so to me, as much of a hardship as it would be, and the expense, I have to say, it's too much of a risk to say, well, let's just go on with the possibility that both schools end up closed.
Okay, before you answer, can I just ask this real quick to understand the earlier question to follow through? If the Department of Ed ended up saying, we don't allow this, would you then close Han and do a teach out of the Han students at the Arizona School?
No.
But you don't currently have the same degree.
We have the same.
It's the same exact degree.
Yeah, master of the acupuncture or master of acupuncture.
It's the very same degree. Okay. So the difference you're proposing then is if they are a U.S. citizen, they go to Arizona. If they're not a U.S. citizen, they go to Han.
That's an option for them.
That isn't what. So it's not a hard and fast. It's a.
No, it's kind of like if someone comes to the U.S., they're from China, and they want to go to the Arizona school, we're not going to stop them. If they want to go to Han, it's kind of like, yes, we're not going to stop them. They would have the choice. But Han University will be focusing specifically on bringing in those students to do a third year.
So they've already got their 2 years.
They've 2 years.
So
they've done everything.
You're changing the admission requirements and all that kind of stuff.
The admission requirements for accepting somebody to do a one-year program is that they've got 2 year prerequisites, like at a community college or a university, plus they would have at least 2 years of a baccalaureate education in traditional Chinese medicine in order to get that third year of the master's.
So you asked an interesting question, and I'd like to actually know the answer to something. She said, if the DOE came back and said, this is not okay, you would separate these out and get rid of Han, which would start him all over, would it not?
It would not necessarily. Yes.
I'm not sure. I think what I would recommend as a practical solution at that point would be to separate physically the two institutions.
Yeah.
I mean, before shutting down Han, because to me, worst case scenario is shutting down Han and forcing Mr. Hu to start all over again. Investing money. So
the problem we are having is other space.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah. But I'm watching all this, and I've heard this. Like, this is a long story. I mean, we're stuck. We don't know what to do because you haven't done that yet, right? Separate them out to alleviate the Department of Ed's concerns.
Well,
have different staff. Stop switching money back and forth between these two entities. You haven't done that, and so. Am I misspeaking? Anyone, please help me, correct me. But we have nowhere to go. At some point, we're going to have to say, this isn't working, and move to a denial of somebody's application because we can't go anywhere.
Two things. First of all, the commingling has terminated, and we've taking steps to make sure that there's transparency and appropriate reflection of the use of funds, because clearly it's an issue that would jeopardize our status with the Department of Education. So to me, the two priorities, Department of Education, contentment with ASOM, and Customs and Immigration Service contentment with Han, and both institutions, or this board's contentment with both institutions, recognizing that this is not squeaky clean because we're reacting to decisions that we didn't anticipate that have been made, for example, by the Department of Education denying Han University. So this is a change in circumstances that we're now trying to accommodate in the best way possible to maintain the investment that's been made and protect the integrity of ASOM. So one thing I want to address is that we're being scrupulous to eliminate the commingling issue and concern. And the second thing is that you know, the reason that this hasn't gone in a straight line is because we've had to react to these decisions that we haven't always anticipated, including the Department of Education, the Klein University. So it seems to me that we have reasonable, viable strategy to keep ASOM from having its federal financial aid jeopardized. If it looks like that's happened, step one is to completely segregate Hahn University, but try to keep it alive. And step two, if that's not satisfactory, then we have to cut the head off of Hahn University to sacrifice, you know, to maintain the integrity of the investment. You know, the investment is no longer going to both creating the venture here in the United States and securing a green card and eventual citizenship, but at least it's preserving the investment.
But is the staff the same? So the dollars going back and forth that we saw is one thing, but the staff for both entities still all the same?
Yeah, I'm not convinced you're decoupled right now. I mean, you're doing both schools, right, Alex?
Yes, I am. But it's sort of like, I think what Adrian is talking about is the finances are very well clear what's Hahn's at this point. I mean, I think when you look at the 2016 audit, you'll see, which should be done in about 2 weeks, you'll see that we have done a concerted effort to make sure that if Arizona School is lacking funds and John has invested in Hahn University, then he would take some of those funds previously and loan the Arizona School some funds, and that would be tracked. So we know that. But then after a while, it's like you're saying, it's kind of like, well, this is going back and forth. So about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we just stopped doing that.
In the past, though, we did some, yeah, some funds transfer between two schools, but the year and year, I remember.
But it's on your current financial statements.
But
also,
those are loans. It's kind of like if we make loans.
But you're implying that it was paid off, but it's still here as of March 31st. 17.
I'm not sure if we implied that it was paid off. I think
so. You're saying that it's not ongoing, but it's still counted as.
So haven't the payoff
a
yet?
Current liability for one and a current liability for the other, which means it's to be paid within the year. And so, we can say, like, either from an accounting standpoint that you've done this or that, but the reality is, and just speaking really bluntly, is that it's hard enough to run one school as a president. It's impossible to run two schools well.
Exactly.
And what we've seen, you know, in document after document, whether it's the catalogs or it's the financial statements, nothing is done as well as it needs to be done. And so to persist in saying that you could do both at the same time, you know, that like this part of my day is spent with Hahn and this part of my day is spent with ASOM, it's, you could make the case from an accounting standpoint, but from a like a human resources standpoint or a performance standpoint, you know, whether it's for the benefit of the students or Mr. Who's investment, it's kind of a fantasy.
So let me say just a couple of things.
And I say that with all due respect to you and for all the really hard work that you put in.
Yeah.
But it's like,
and I think the hard work that you put in has improved the situation at the Arizona School considerably. I mean, when I took the job, which was the day before, we had a site visit, we had 18 non-compliances. They came back a year later, we had 9. They came back, we were on probation. They took us off probation because there's been so much improvement. Academically, I think the school has made significant improvements in terms of what they're offering to the students. The students are much happier, the morale. When the site team left a couple months ago, they said, this school has been transformed. We don't know what you did, but the morale is incredibly high. Okay, so those are non-tangibles that we experience on a daily basis. And so the tangibles are being taken off probation. Having more students enroll in the school than we have had for the previous few years. And I'm talking about ASOM. So I think that, yes, it's true, it's difficult to run two schools, but I think the schools are small enough, and we know the schools well enough that it can be done. And I believe, personally, having been doing this for almost 30 years, that there is an upward tangent for the Arizona school in terms of regaining national credibility, gaining credibility with the Accreditation Commission, and being recognized as a higher quality institution than it was like 3 years ago.
So let me ask you this. You're teaching the same program at both schools, and the students can choose to, whether they're citizens or non-citizens, they can go to either school. Are the students, regardless of which school, are they sitting in the same classroom?
No.
So they're separate?
Yes.
And also, I only promote Han University outside of the U.S.
So John has been in China for the last couple of months, and he's going around to universities to promote Han University. So we can bolster that third-year program.
So is the tuition different if they go to Han versus Arizona for the same purpose?
Same tuition.
It's a little bit different. So, and the third-year, the one-year program a little bit higher than the regular.
We have things like fees, like SEVIS fees, some things like that. Some of the fees are a little bit more, but...
Is it a one-year program at Arizona as well?
They don't have a one-year program.
So it's not the same exact program.
I could create a curriculum by
picking
things up.
No, I'm not actually, no, we don't want you being any more creative.
No, I didn't catch it.
Back up. Where you are right now.
Yeah.
If I walked into that school.
Which?
That's the question.
Yeah. If I walk into that building.
I walk in the door. The same exact program is not taught in both. So there's a one-year program at Han.
Yes.
But I cannot sign up for a one-year program at Arizona.
Right now. No. I cannot.
You could transfer.
No.
But
it's different now. Yes.
It's transferring something different.
Right.
So
yeah.
Is the credential is the same at the top.
Yeah.
But in one program, you have to have more prerequisites, and you're going to take 1 year. And in the Arizona school, you have less prerequisites and you take more at your school?
No.
But it's a one-year program only open for the non-citizens.
That's the difference.
Yeah, a difference.
How many credits is it a ton for the one-year program?
Around 100, no.
For the one-year program, it's like 56 credits.
To 52.
52 to 56,
yeah.
Depending upon if you're going for the Master of Acupuncture or the Master of Acupuncture
and at the Arizona school.
It would be exactly the same, because that would be... Hold on just a second. It wouldn't be quite the same, because there may be a difference of like 5 credits between each school.
You're saying that students get advanced standing.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so the program is the same,
yeah.
But the people who come in are given credit.
Like, a lot of transfer credit.
What is a transfer credit from whatever country they're coming from?
No, because of the one-year program, like this, I have examples of for the Chinese students, so all the Chinese students already have a degree in China with the Chinese medicine at least 5 years, and they come U.S. and to have the 1 year program and get the master degree. Yeah, and around 52 or 56 credits, but so for the whole program is 150 some.
So the difference, credits. I think the difference is that with the Arizona school and with Han University. Even though they're very similar, they have different flavors. So, like, at the Arizona school, they have more Tui Na, which is a type of massage. They may have different kinds of classes that they offer, but 95% of the classes are virtually identical. They may require 5 more credits to graduate in their Master of Acupuncture program than Han. So, if you're going to keep a one-year program at the Arizona school, you're going to have to take in consideration those 5 credits, say, to determine what the one-year structure would be in terms of the number of credits that a person would be required to take to graduate.
I think the difference is that we open to the different markets. So it's like Arizona School, we open to the domestic market. But like a one-year program, we only open to the international market. It's different.
Is that only right? Open to the, so Han is only open to international, or you would accept U.S.
We would accept okay. We would accept.
So here's what I'm getting at. Okay. A little bait and switch here. I'm just trying to figure out if, as a U.S. citizen, I walk in the door and I'm trying to figure out where to go, is the conversation going to be, well, if you want Title IV, I know you came in for here, but if you want Title IV, you need to go through this door. If you don't want Title IV, you go through that door. And is it?
No, I think except that with the posture of Han University now, the decision is made to not start people at ground zero to go through a three-year program.
You just said that you want to make it happen to take
yep.
So
say that again.
It sounded like you were saying that it didn't matter if you were a U.S. citizen or not, you could still go to Han. So,
but only for the one-year program.
Because I believe yes,
that's so all they offer.
Students
that's all we offer.
Will choose the Arizona School because of the Title IV.
So if someone's transferring them from Ohio and they've got 2 years already of a TCM school and all they need is 1 year, they can go to either Han or ASOM as long as they fulfill the prerequisites and we transfer the credits in.
But you couldn't get financial aid at
right. Han. Exactly. So another thing I just want to mention.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're not selling financial aid and we're not having any bait and switch and we're not having someone who is applying to Han and being told, oh, you can't come here, but you go to our sister school and get financial aid. And I think probably that's one of the department's concerns with having the two businesses and one school is trying to figure out what it is. Yeah. And we don't know what the department is going to do, so
nope.
I don't think that we should deny them because we don't know what the department is going to do. But I also don't quite know what to do.
Well, don't we need some protection no matter what the department does? If the department okays it, then we're pretty good. Yeah. But if the department doesn't okay it, then you say, well, you're going to split them up and separate the assets and separate the buildings and all the rest of that. But I think our concern is always with the students, and if the students get left high and dry because you pull out, or you, in either case, pull either one of these schools out, then we're left holding the bag for the students. Is that right? Isn't that everyone's concern? Do we have a bond on both schools?
There's more
two separate lots.
Just that.
No,
no
we,
bond.
We have a for.
Han.
It's like 15,000.
Han's 15. ASOM's 56,003.
Han's grad students will be graduating. To school will basically be empty of students who have gone through the 3 or 4 year programs. Probably by the end of fall quarter, maybe there might be a straggler a little bit in the winter quarter. And any students that we would take in would be students who are just doing the third-year program. We would not accept students starting the program because that's not what we're offering.
But I thought we just established that they wanted the one-year program. Even if I was an Arizona citizen and I wanted a one-year program, I could go to Han to take that one-year program. I just have to pay cash.
Depends on them. Yeah, so by there are several.
So we still have to protect those students. Right? We still have to
especially if they
protect those. Yeah, exactly, because then they can come back the entire time to the state if something were to happen.
It's an Arizona licensed institution.
Yeah.
There's a possibility that an Arizona resident will attend that school. We still have the ability to.
So, well, international, but international wouldn't necessarily fall in here, but the Arizona students for sure would.
If they are physically present in the state while attending the school.
Yeah. Oh, they still too. So there you go. And we have more.
So I guess at the end of the day, to your point, the question is, if you know you're willing to incur the risk of both schools, you know, being vulnerable, then our responsibility is not to backstop you, but our responsibility is to make sure that the students and the state fund are protected. So what do we need to do that? And because frankly, I don't think we could unknot the string that you were talking about. So we can't figure that out. That's your job to do. And so the question is, what is the, you know, do we have enough as far as the two bonds to make sure that the students and the state are protected? And anything beyond that is, you know, I don't think that we can, I don't think we can solve.
And my only question is, do we have any, are we responsible at all for the assessing the administrative capability of these institutions?
Yeah.
And if so, then that's my only other thing, is because we're all confused. We can't.
Well, that's just what I've said, and again, with have a lot of respect for Alex. He's been in front of us a million times, but I've always questioned the administrative capability of the school because it seems like they're just so slow to fix things and get things correct. So that is a concern of mine. And I do applaud, I'm glad you kind of recap, because I do remember when the first visit from the accrediting body and such like that, and how I don't think you're going to recover from that. You did, so congratulations.
So one of the things that you look at the site visit report, mm-hmm. the last one, they cited the administration as being strong.
Good, good.
So I have been at the school for a few years now, and we have made administrative shifts and changes.
Right.
And I feel like I have a pretty good administration at this point. I'm pretty comfortable and confident. So
good.
I don't know what to say.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's.
And I want to say one more little thing before my place. And that is, stick to EB-5. John will be submitting the information to the USCIS, United States Immigration Service. Within a few weeks, we have a 90-day window between July 7th and I think October 7th. He will be submitting what he has done to show that he is invested in the school, and they will have anywhere from a few weeks to maybe up to 18 months to 24 months to make a decision. So our hope is simply to keep both schools functioning and viable while they make that decision. That would be the best outcome.
Once he gets the green card, can the schools merge at that point, or does he have to maintain?
Yes, they can merge.
They can merge. If he doesn't get the green card, the schools can merge.
If he doesn't get the green card, they're going to merge?
They're going to do something to bring their energies together, because this is his investment. It's not something that he wants to
do. If I may, I want to introduce some information about the EB-5 program. So the immigration law created this EB-5 foreign investor program. Generally speaking, a foreign national would be required to invest $1 million to a commercial enterprise in the United States to actively making products or providing services, so that the investment will create full-time positions for 10 full-time positions. And the investor will get a green card. However, the investor green card is a long process. First, you have to provide accredited investor petition. That is, we generally say it's an I-526 petition. You file that with the Immigration Service, it takes them up to 2 years to adjudicate that application, which John has went through that. So back in 2013,
yeah.
That's when he petitioned the 526 to invest $1 million in Han University. Finally, in October, in June 2015, they approved his credits, that he is a qualified investor, and he could get a permanent resident. Upon that approval, he files his green card application. It took them almost six months. By October 2017, he gets a conditional green card. the condition is good for 2 years, and in this 2 years, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security requires you to put your money into work and create that 10 full-time positions. So 3 months before the 2 year conditional card expires, you're supposed to file the final report to the immigration. And for him, that is due. So now he has gone all the way so far to the final lawful permanent resident. If for whatever reason that he has to go back to ground one, it's going to take him more than 4 years to come to here, because investors from mainland China get increased in the last few years. Each year, the U.S. Immigration Service gave 10,000 quota numbers to those EB-5 investors, and we got so many investors from mainland China. Now, the line is back to 2015. So if you file your new qualification, the I-526 today, by the time they adjudicate your qualifications, you may not have a quota to apply for a green card because so many people are backed up. They have already filed in the last few years.
But the permanent resident exists.
That's that.
Mr. Hu already has that status.
Well, you don't get that until your qualification is approved, plus you have a quota number to apply for green card. So right now, Mr. Hu is in the last stage that we need to file the I-829 to report his investment, what he has done. So in July, he will be...
The final documents, and we may know next year today and the result.
Have you created the 10?
Yes, I believe so. So, or is in
must,
the...
Must you know?
I mean,
if you're filing it soon, we're filing. Yeah.
Can I just have to say, again, with all due respect and appreciation for the investment and everything, I'm uncomfortable sort of coupling the decision of the board with your own personal.
Absolutely.
Aspirations for citizenship, which again I respect, laud, and appreciate the investment, but the decision can't be contingent. It's like we can't base it on sort of like the emotion or sentimentality about all the work that you've gone through. And so again, I will bring it back and to Dr. Leck's point about competent or not competent. The capabilities or not, the schools have somehow survived. And being at a small school myself, I recall a classmate when I was in the doctoral program who said that small colleges are like cockroaches. You can't kill them. And so I think the only there's 3,000 small colleges in the United States out of 4,000 schools. Three quarters of them are very small, and so there's a resiliency that obviously between the two institutions somehow is there. It's not our I don't know that we could come to a conclusion, you know, capable, etc. I think the question is what's the threshold that we have to make a decision on what will be the amount that protects the state? And so I would defer to staff, to give us that. And anything beyond that is your risk. And I don't think that we can solve it.
Yeah.
You know, you're right.
And I think
well said.
For the renewal of ASOM, just an update on how it would just be for ASOM.
In terms of the bond, bond calculation was they currently have a 56.3.
It's cash deposit in
part, right? part.
$20,000 bond, 36 was cash.
Using our calculation of the revenue of 33.34, calculation is under 56.3. So,
which we have the discretion to increase or decrease if we wish.
Yes.
According to our conversation earlier.
Then we should just maintain it.
I'm just saying that we can do either way.
So, on a separate thing for a moment here to go back to what we're doing here. So, the HON update, thank you for the update. Thank you for the clarification, because we've been completely confused and didn't really understand why he did just start over again. Now we get it. I don't know about the rest of the board, but I don't know what's going to happen when you go before the department, and obviously we're going to have to deal with that when we get there. As far as your materials, your catalog finally did make me weep.
Good things take time.
There's still one small oddity, and that is the length of your program. We got a couple of enrollment agreements, and some had the right numbers on it, and some didn't. So at this point, I have no idea which is the accurate one. So please make sure you're using the accurate one. The catalog and the VA have the same number of hours. I'm just gonna have to trust you on that. So as far as the application itself, it's putting aside the bond, does anyone have any questions on application?
I had also some feedback on the time. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out hours and full time and part time and stuff like that. So I'll give those to Terry to hand to them.
Yeah. My mom was going to say way better than it was. So we're incrementally improving there. Okay, so if we don't have any other questions, then those things will not be things generally that would hold up our food law religious suggestions for improvement.
Well, I think that like you stated, they would confuse the student as to far as what is their commitment, like in one day it says 2,600 hours, and it says you're going full-time for 3 years, but yet the hours don't calculate that. Full-time at 40 hours a week is actually, anyways, I did the calculation, 65 weeks, so I couldn't get the 3 years, and so I am concerned that students don't know what in the world they're doing. But the marks are there, so I think they need to go back and revisit that and help people understand. I can get it full time. It also does talk about morning classes and some evening, but if it's a morning, I don't see how that's full time. So I'm just.
I mean, you marked it like this.
Yes, I was about. Yes, about this mark.
Oh, dear.
Okay. And then as far as the bond goes, does any board member think that we should request increase, or are we comfortable with what is here? Not that we don't really enjoy seeing you repeatedly.
I know I'm going to miss you.
But obviously, you need to keep us up to date on any updates that would ultimately impact either of the schools. And in my opinion, it would behoove you to make sure you get your next recertification with the Department of Ed in early. Don't wait till the last minute. It has to be done 3 months early. But if I were you, I would send it earlier than that. They may not look at early, but you don't want to be taking any risk of being at all late. And make sure, I know you're as tired of your catalog as I am, but look at her comments. Perhaps have somebody go through and read it who hasn't read it a million times to find any typos or oddities, and make sure you show well when you submit to the department, because a concern for us has continually been administrative capability. And so typically, what you present to us and then how you present yourself, there's often a very, very large gap. So the department is not having you coming in with your impassioned pleas. What you submit is what you get. And you may recall that I suggested to you that the HON catalog you're submitting was not adequate, but you submitted it, and they didn't even get that far before they cut you off. You need to show up. So would anyone like to make a motion regarding the...
Yes. Assuming that, as Dr. Lex says, the changes are made to the enrollment agreement and the catalog so that it's consistent, and assuming that you maintain the $56,000 current bond, I would make the motion that we, and I'm sorry, we also have a requirement that you maintain your quarterly reporting to us, assuming all those conditions are met.
Clarification, ASOM is not on quarterly reporting, it's HON.
Okay.
You
have
it on, you have
it
yet,
report
as to.
Oh, well, you're convoluted. Okay, agreed. So you don't want to have
it. I take back
what can I say?
The quarterly reporting on ASOM. This motion only has to do with ASOM, and that is to renew the license for ASOM on the condition that we correct the things as noted by Slack and Dr. Leck, and also maintain the bond.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Do you agree to maintain the bond?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Okay. all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. They are scheduled on, even though you looked at them, do you want it to still be scheduled? Yeah. The HON will be scheduled for a financial manager.
I will prove it.
You have a cast for June.
Which? Next one?
Yeah.
So when is the next time they need to come forth by this page?
What?
September?
No.
September.
Yeah, I can only find more
here. Yeah. And I'll be here. Super deep dive. For them.
Pardon? You're in the
cycle.
His shirt would suggest he was in the sun.
Oh, I know
he
was on the
vacation. Let's go.
All right. Location of program license applications for a Liberty Blank Crane School.
How much did you learn today?
You know.
150%.
It is, I was thinking that very thing.
Mr.
Hugh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we got to watch everything.
No, but I think this is a big one.
Sometimes you don't get them. I didn't give Arizona Christian. I didn't get anything. It was probably in the download. But
it was in the download. You didn't get Arizona Christian?
No, I had nothing for that. That's why I didn't say anything.
I did.
Yeah.
What are we missing?
He was missing Arizona Christian.
But it was provided to him, so it's fine.
All right. Ms. Dento. Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board, Liberty Crane is seeking a non-accredited vocational program license to offer crane training and safety. They have posted the required $15,000 surety bond, and Tom was a pleasure to work with.
Thank you. In spite of my mistakes?
Oh, well, I'm so used to it. All right. Not yours.
Overall.
Not yours per se. Your board member lead is Mr. Tharp.
Hi. Welcome. And thanks for your patience. I know you had a long day. Some reason you get unfortunate if you get me assigned, because I notice I'm never towards the beginning of the she always assigns me really late in the agenda. So
we covered that with your name tag or where you are in the
No, I keep moving down the rank. I've been here longer than everybody except permission. Anyway, but thank you. And I would say that you had a very good application, and I appreciate it because it was easier to review, and I did not find a lot wrong with it at all. However, some of my colleagues may have. But before I get into that, would you like to make any opening statements or tell me how things are going?
I didn't know that. What kind of
statement?
They need
to state their names.
Go
ahead. State your names.
I'm just going to do that for a thing. I'm Howard Kaplan. I'm the owner of Liberty Crane and Rigging Consultants. When I started the company 7 years ago, I had an assistant help me with the name. Had we then known what we now know, Liberty Crane School has a much, much better it rolls off the tongue a lot better. The person that helped me with that is my office manager, who is also my wife of 27 years. And I was going to let her introduce herself, as well as Tom, our sales manager. I want to give you a real brief history on me and the company, and then I was going to let them talk for just a second if it was okay.
Can you just introduce yourself quick, sure, and then come back, please, just for the record?
I'm Darla Kaplan. I'm the office manager for the
Ukraine. Tom Allen, sales manager.
Thanks, okay.
I'm a crane guy. I have been in heavy equipment my entire life. I started when I was 16. I started in a trade school. I quit high school because I knew more than everybody else, and I wanted to prove it, and I got my GED, and I said, see, I was right. And then everybody said, okay, what are you going to do? I was very, very fortunate that I got involved in the Job Corps, which is a Department of Labor program in which I lived at a school to be a heavy equipment operator and diesel mechanic. After there, I spent years and years in construction. I went into the Navy Seabees for almost 14 years, and all I've ever done is operate heavy equipment and or teach or tell people how to operate heavy equipment. About 6 or 7 years ago, when I started Liberty, I had the opportunity and the thought of being able to finally give back. I'm in a position where I can give back, and I started. I started teaching with UCSD, as far as OSHA outreach training centers. I did the 500, the 501. I created crane and rigging programs for UCSD, and I love talking about cranes and rigging. I love teaching. I really, really do. And then I had an idea of Kaplan's Crane College, and I was going to spell it KKK because...
Oh, yeah. That worked out well.
It's obviously a joke. But the idea of the school was I wanted to do something to be able to give back. So in doing that, I thought if I could create a school. And you folks probably know, there's no doubt you do, scholastically, way, way more than I do. I know cranes. And I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know I needed a license. I didn't know I couldn't call myself a school. I didn't know anything. And 2 years ago, Tom and I started talking about my goals and where I wanted to go and what my dreams were. And he's helped me so much with that, as far as the company goes, spiritually, emotionally, all of it. And obviously with the help of my wife, I think I got a shot. So that's kind of why we're here. So
have you been operating the school?
I'm sorry?
The school's been operating non-licensed? Is that what we're saying? No.
Not for the... What we're trying to create is actually an apprenticeship. What we're really trying to do is what we've done in the past, and I'm pretty sure it's okay, but... Again, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't have to impugn yourself. Just go.
We're good.
We're good. Anyway.
We're good. There's a federal requirement to certify mobile crane operators, and the law has gone back and forth. California made it the law in 2005, and the federal government, the law is actually coming up at the end of the year. So because of that, I have been assisting in certifying mobile crane operators for well on 15 years now. I've worked for a couple of different companies, including my own, where we certify mobile crane operators under a third-party certification. The apprenticeship, the idea of the apprenticeship is maybe a guy will be a crane operator or gal, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But my thought was if we start them out and teach them everything below the hook, that being how to rig something, how to signal for something, how to run a forklift, how to run an aerial lift, how an overhead crane works, that they could literally go into any trade. And in sitting here today and listening to a couple of folks talk about the higher education, I don't know if any of you have heard some of the conversations that Mike Rowe has had recently in his conversation of a higher education. I'm certainly not trying to be insulting by any means, but I'm a pretty good crane operator and I've made a pretty good living and higher education. I've run a 500-ton crane with 400-foot of boom in it. That's pretty high. So as far as your height goes or your level or your thought process of education, I'm a big fan of trades. With somebody that goes through our apprenticeship, they could go anywhere in any construction field, including out to Palo Verde, to actually have someone who understands rigging and those concepts of physics work in a nuclear power plant. I can help with that.
All right.
Did you want to hear from those two?
If you have anything to say, briefly, because it's getting late. But,
I think I'll let them talk.
All right.
When Howard and I first met, it coincided with a ministry I'm involved in, Neighborhood Ministries at 19th Avenue in Van Buren. And in talking with Kit and them, they were looking for a program that would help some of their high school students who have proven them and their families that they want a hand up instead of a handout. And so in that process, I then got a hold of the City of Phoenix, which was wanting to help them with that. City of Phoenix said we need to come to the state of Arizona for licensing in order to, you know, go down that road. And we're very patient in this process because we know it's going to take time. So between neighborhood, friends of ours, people, companies like Phoenix Mission, we're looking for those young men who are looking for that middle-class, blue-collar application instead of what's below that. And young people who have been moved towards computers and found out that doesn't make much money, and I don't think I'm really good at that, they're just struggling. And so we've known for years, having grown up on a farm, I've known a lot of people who love working outside, working with equipment. We've known for years there's people out there looking for this kind of middle-class trade. Our hope and our vision is to help find those people, five guys at a time. Okay. So that's the process.
Great. So you got the good background. You've taught academically. It sounds like it looks like you have a good program through here. But running a school is a whole different animal if you haven't done it. So what kind of infrastructure do you have in place to maintain records and do all the stuff that we're going to require you to do to be a school?
Some, to be blunt and honest, we certainly have a little. What we've been doing is, again, the company's been around almost 7 years. In doing that, we have done a considerable amount of training. In addition to the training and education, there was always the requalifications for certain things. So we're building on that. My problem certainly stems from I don't know what I don't know.
Right. It, to my point, a lot of people, certainly our staffers here, the executive director, assistant, all of them are helpful the way to do, but they're not consultants. So I do think it's worth your time to probably talk to somebody who's been in, especially vocational, which is, again, my area also, that knows that. You've been in, you said, before?
No, I'm just going to say one of the advantages we have is, and even listening to what happened today, you asked, what did we learn? What I learned was, and I think we all did, was be careful, take this slow. And that's been our intent all along, is not to grow the school massive. We're truly are looking at five at a time. Gateway Community has taken our curriculum and they're putting into their apprentice program.
Okay.
And so I think between the two, we're going to have, we'll understand this process.
Yeah, just to do it's stuff like records management, campus yes. management systems, yeah. things that, you know, grievance policy, yeah. which you yeah. have in here. But yeah. these are all things you have to adhere to, yeah. respond to, they're time framed. Yeah. And I just, I really applaud your effort. But there are some pitfalls of running a school if you haven't ran a school
yeah,
proper.
And we haven't.
Yeah,
So. But I think the best thing about this is we're going to go very slow.
Okay.
I would say in the next year, you're probably not going to see a lot of revenue from this.
Sure.
Because there's also with workforce a year period.
Wait, yeah. I'm all well aware of that.
Gateway's going to be a process, so.
Yep.
You know, and I think it's my responsibility to start with, having started this with Howard, that between the three of us, we will come up with that program. Okay. We're in the process of doing that. It's very obvious that if we don't pay attention,
We'll be back in here.
No, I'm glad you did, because one of the things is administrative capability, as you've heard said over and over and over and over and over today. Anyway, moving into the application, I'd like to go to the insurance tab. This is maybe I've just got an old copy, but which is the cert of insurance. It's expired for general liability and professional liability. They expired at the end of March, so you'll have to renew that.
We'll update that. As you know, we have to resupply these to all the companies that we work for, so it's just a matter of getting the right information.
As we move on, I didn't have any, but I will ask you, Dr. Mittman, financial statements, if you have any issues with them. Okay. And the program forms, the grievance was fine, refund was fine, enrollment agreement. I think I was okay with that. Trish, did you have anything? No, Ms. Lennon?
I kind of have mine in different orders.
Okay, I'll just go through mine then, because I had very...
I'll cross out anything if you
want. I do appreciate, well, it's four pages, which is kind of large, but it's not as big as some we've seen.
We've had enrollment agreements that are 15 pages or whatever, so four is still large, but it's not as large as we've seen.
So again, I might not, but if I go to catalog now, if I go to page 8 of the catalog, have you guys got that with you?
Yeah.
Okay. It's always a good idea to write what we said.
You'll see these yellow tags.
Yeah.
These are her going through all the details of font sizes and camp. All that stuff. We've corrected that already.
So. Yeah, no, that all looks good. I have a question under the basic statement. It says prospective students must be 18 years of age, period. If under 18 years of age, the application needs to be sent by the guardian. It says must, and then you go right back and you totally contradict it. Must they be 18? A lot of times...
18 is a minimum age, then why do you allow for someone to sign
up?
Here's the reason. Some high schools have contacted us and asked if they can be a part of this, and I felt like that there needed to be parental appearance when it came to that, and the reason the high schools are interested is because the trades are not in the high schools, so they're trying to get the students that they identify that would fit into this to begin to get into the process.
Well, we don't, again, I want you to know, we just look at these documents, we weigh them against our statutes, of course, but we don't have a statute on that they must be 18. That's the school to decide, because some programs have insurance things where they can't insure their students until they're 18. So if that's the case there, then it's hard 18 to strike the parent may sign. If not, then put...
Yeah.
You know, I was just trying to respect the parents.
Well,
if they're under 18, they have to have parents.
It's not a choice if they're under 18.
It's just language.
Legally, the first sentence says you're not going to admit anyone under 18. Oh, and then their second sentence says, but if they're under 18, have a parent sign.
So
if you're not planning to admit anyone under 18, you don't need a signature from the parent.
Thank you.
But you still have to have a minimum, like beyond the compulsory attendance in the state.
I was missing the first one. Yeah,
so you can just strike that second sentence if you never plan on admitting anyone under 18.
Got it.
But if you are planning, you need to change the motion.
And
a high school graduate can be 16 or 17.
Yep.
Right. But you as a post-secondary, you have to have a minimum age, so it should say beyond the age of compulsory attendance in the state, so you can't have a 15-year-old.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, compulsory is 16 in the state, right?
I think it's 16 years. Yeah. One other thing that was, as long as we're on this page.
Yeah, go ahead. Much more.
You don't seem to care if they can read
anything.
Excuse you. You're not having any educational minimum at all. So if a person comes to you who's 18 years old and dropped out of school in fifth grade and they can't read anything beyond Dr. Seuss, are you going to admit them?
I thought we had it.
You have nothing.
A lot of people at high school,
Well, I really thought that we had prerequisites, and what we did, I remember in the beginning of our program, is in the introduction, we had talked about that very thing.
But you don't, in your entrance requirements, all you say is that you're not prejudiced, and they have to be 18 or not. So this whole thing isn't working.
Well, here's what happens. The answer is, honestly, we do have people come to us, and like that gentleman that just came to us, he's gone through a class three times. He doesn't have a GED. He's Native American. He hears English, translates to Native American, translates back out, then tries to pass a test. His employers love him, and they're trying to help him get through this, and so are we. So what do? Drop the guy because he has a lot of capacity? And the answer is
you just
no.
Have to have...
to have a standard in place.
Yeah, yeah, have some type of standard, yeah.
That's so what... You have a recommendation?
That's exactly
well, a lot of times if people are going to accept people above, there's tests out there like you can get from Wonderlic, which are like an ATB test. At which assesses they at least read and write at a seventh grade level. So,
okay.
So you should, so if you're going to Ms. Leonard's point, there's nothing, it just says, hey, we won't discriminate and you're 18, come on to school. So you do going to need some qualifiers because if not, you're going to show up in front of the complaint committee with me and Ms. Leonard and Mr. Jacobs and have to explain to the students. So.
It's the type of thing you might give thought to. The young person gets into the cockpit of a big brain, and he can't read the emergency instructions in front of him, and something's wagging around in the air. And so you just got to ask yourself, how do I protect he or she, whoever that young person is? And this might, what we've done as educators, we've had to ask that question. Mm-hmm. We've had to say, it's not no, it's just not now.
Right.
You may have to go, you know, as much as the young person might have stiff-armed public education or his teachers or whatever, there's an appropriate level that you're going to want to have in place. You'll have to screen for it somehow.
We had I certainly apologize for not knowing all of the line items. First off, I think it's awesome that this board exists, again, because you don't know what you don't know. I'm not trying to kiss anybody's butt, but to actually protect students, I think it's fantastic. When I found out about the surety bond, same deal. I think it's awesome. The issue is you're not wrong when you talk about somebody goes in a crane. To run a crane, you have to understand physics. There's a great many concepts that we have to do. Again, with some kind of levels, the fact that those levels exist or that I can even research what reading or math comprehension is a minimum, we'll certainly do that.
And even if there's any physical things, like if you get a job and it says you have to be able to carry 15 pounds or something, it's just, if there's any, you don't want to be prejudiced against people who are handicapped at the same time. If there are some limited mobility or even a reference in passing about not fear of heights, not like you have to test for that, but... Sometimes people don't climb into some of those things. Yeah. And we did that for last spring school, the same thing. You want to make sure that you're not wording in a way that means someone couldn't do it. But like a school that teaches refrigeration, let's say, if a person is afraid of heights and they cannot climb up on a roof, then it would be criminal to train him when he literally is not going to do his job. So same thing, if they can't get up into it, whatever, wherever it is, we don't know what the requirements are, but we should.
See, I'm very familiar with the federal rules and regulations in regards to a mobile crane operator. And in 05 or 06, the federal government came out and stipulated that the physical requirements for a crane operator that used to be, the crane operator had to be able to read and write, and the language that the manuals were written, had to be able to see at least 20, 30 snell, was not subject to fainting, and
those are all things that should be in here then.
The issue is they removed all that. The entire physical requirements that they once had.
I know why. It's just
the American Disabilities Act.
The
letter of interpretation stipulated that very thing. So they currently say...
I still think you can list what you expect as physical requirements. You know, again, it's not a bar none because you're going to get people who come and say, I have this disability, and then you're going to have to weigh reasonableness against a whole different area.
Or these requirements or
These are the general requirements.
They definitely should be reviewed in the enrollment process with these people.
Okay. Look at nursing programs I work because they have a very similar issue. You still have to be able to lift a patient.
Right.
I mean, there's
you still have to be able to go
off.
I just have that.
You cannot be a nurse.
So my concern was that, again, I hate to keep going back to you don't know what you don't, but I didn't.
Right.
The issue is that I was very, very concerned about discriminating at all against everybody or anybody or anything for the fear of being sued by one way or the other.
If it isn't something that can be tested against, then you can put it as a statement that students understand that they will be climbing heights of such and such or whatever. So you just have to have it somewhere. I mean, we've had people who say sign up for massage therapy and then they're in the complaint committee because they didn't know they had to touch somebody. No, that happened.
Fair enough. Okay.
You can't apply common sense to a lot of this stuff. A lot of people don't have common sense.
Okay.
Yeah, truly.
In the cell phone tower, said people didn't know they were afraid of heights, and then they got through the class and they had to go through their first climb and it was afraid of heights.
Okay. Anything else on that?
I'm with you. Thank you.
If you want,
I have a bunch of catalog things on me.
I do too.
Yeah. Well, let me do one last question. Usually, as part of this application, I guess this is more for Ms. Stansfield. Marketing material is supposed to be in here. There's none in here at all.
It's because Liberty Crane School doesn't exist yet.
Because you don't have any mock-ups of how you're going to advertise or what you're going to do.
We had some in and I thought I understood we should take it out, so I did.
No. Well, we must have been.
That's a biggie because
we have a logo.
We have to look for the words and make sure you're not saying things you shouldn't say and using puffery. You know, say we're the best. And
that last school had a brochure, and I had some objections to things that they wrote.
Yeah,
right.
And in your business plan, you had a little bit of puffery.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
All right, that's good. Then you go ahead.
Okay. So it's a requirement that I have to find like a minimum number of things to ask about.
Who made that
requirement? Where is
that? I support it fully.
I make a motion. No.
Here's what we understood going in. You're here to protect not only the student, but us also.
Yes. So, right. We don't want you to come before the complaint committee.
We don't want you to get in trouble. We want you to have your school and do good things. You know.
We try to help you understand what things might trip you up so you don't get tripped up.
Perfect.
And sometimes when people have a high level of pride in what they're doing, they unintentionally jump off a cliff, and we'd really like you to not do that. So we appreciate the enthusiasm, but somebody needs to rein them in. So first, right off the bat, it's mentioned in your materials that the people will have to be certified come this fall, right? Looking at other programs, there's a wide number of hours that people may require in their crane training, and some of them are combo programs with multiple kinds of cranes, etc. But you have 360 hours and almost $23,000. So the question is, are both those hours and those dollars reasonable, equitable, fair? Sure.
Yep. These are they're based on the fees that we already currently charge.
Okay. Can the students come in and enroll for only separate modules, or do they have to take the whole thing?
Under this program, this is about the apprentice program, so I'm understanding that this program, that the license that we're having is under the complete module.
It is.
Good answer.
And not
Good answer.
So, question. So, that does not prevent you from continuing to offer those individual in under 40 hours, under $1,000 that wouldn't require licensing. So, just watch for if you do choose to have multiple variations, like you have people coming in, they only want these three or whatever. If that creates a program, you have to come back and get those programs approved.
Is the individual program?
Right.
If you choose to, like you have, the way this is broken down, let me
A license will come with every program that we've approved, the state board has approved. So if you add something different or change something different, you have applications and stuff, you'd have to come and get it added to your, like, go through an approval process.
So you have four modules.
Yes.
If you decide that you're going to sell a bundle of one and two and two and four and one and three, I'm shaking your head, but I'm telling you, it's going to come up. So just let me know.
No, I understand. If you do that,
given the price of these, the only thing... Your intro is the only thing that's less than $1,000. So if you decide to unbundle or rebundle in any way to have a different program, and you may find that that is the case, you may find that people need or want less than what you're currently selling. And it's okay if you do that if you come back and check in to find out, this is what we want to do. Do I require a licensure for that? So just don't jump off the cliff. Find out what you need to do.
That's a clarification on that. So if outside of this, because this is the whole program, an individual comes to us and says, we want to take your crane operators training, and it's a one-week training, that's what we usually do now, that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about somebody new that's an apprentice.
I'm talking about your program is 360 hours.
Yeah.
And we have to license anything that's over 40 hours and over $1,000. So if you are going to parcel out any other of your program, pay attention to whether it has to be or not. Like, we've had some people come in who every individual module they can sell independently, but if they put two together, it needs to be licensed. And they decided to bundle them all and offer one program, which they can do. But then they had to come back to licensure if they were bundling any little ones.
They want to decouple it.
Now, you could have, if you allow transfer credits, you could have a student who's coming in and is going to test out of some section and you give them credit, and that's fine if you're still giving them that whole diploma.
Okay.
But just...
Understood. Thanks.
Yeah, just be careful. Okay. In your down payment, in your payment, you say that you pay by module. So if the student is coming in, they would have to pay $995 up front, and then before they start module one, they pay $74.65. So it's not like a you're not asking for $22,595 up front. You're asking them to pay before the start of each module. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So when you apply your refund policy, are you applying your refund policy against the entire program of 360 hours, or are you applying it against each one of these modules?
Wait, I didn't.
I had the impression from reading it that it was by module, but I thought
it was by module.
But then it says, and I have a note on this, the percentage of the clock hours attempted is determined by dividing the total number of clock hours that elapsed from the student's start date to the student's last day of attendance. My concern here was if they apply that thing and you look at the cost, module one is $7,000. Right? So then, and that they're not even. It's not like a. So then, that would only make sense to me if it was consistent for each module. If you're going to apply it to the total program.
No, but they're not applying to the total program. So their intention is to do it by module. So
this makes
your words. In some places, it sounded like you were charging by. You're signing up the entire program. You're kind of obligated the module at a time. And therefore, the refund policy is done a module at a time. But your policy is not quite clear enough. And so I'm going to make some suggestions to you of how you can make it clearer.
Okay.
So in your refund policy.
On page nine.
You say, before the beginning of the program, the student is entitled to 100% refund of tuition. That's great. Then you say, after the commencement of each class, the tuition paid refund amount shall be determined as follows. In there, if you added in that 100% of completed modules is obligated, and that the refund policy is applicable to the module that they're in when they are withdrawing.
Okay.
Right? So if they've already taken two modules, they owe you for all of that. If they're in the third module, then all of this math is done against that module. So just make sure where you're talking about the number of hours, you say the hours in the module. You just keep bringing it back so nobody gets confused about what's enumerated.
That totally makes sense.
Okay. you know, I have in numerous places that you have like under enrollment. You want to make sure that it's clear, like you have prospective students may enroll prior to the beginning of the introduction to trade module. So that sounds like that's where they have to start. And then you say all of the modules require that the student be registered 15 days prior to beginning the class. Well, they're enrolled in the entire program, but they have to do some separate registration for the class.
Yeah.
I think we're leaning towards payments. Not
okay,
positive.
That's not...
Yeah, I need to talk
about it. Whatever you want to call it. Okay. Your cancellation and refund policy in your catalog is not completely worded the same as what is in the EA. So once you go through and figure out how you're wording it, have the exact words in both places or okay. it's confusing.
Okay.
There's not a great deal of difference, but there's a little bit. On page 9, under attendance requirements, you have an overall attendance rate of 85% is required. Mm-hmm. And then you don't say anything about whether they have can do makeup or if they're going to have to withdraw and retake the module. And then later you say if they don't have 85%, they're out and they have to repeat the entire module. But within this attendance requirements, you need to make that clear. And let's say they're at 84%. Are you going to let them, you know, have one-on-one with an instructor or just flat out? If they hit less than 85%, they repeat the whole module.
I'm just trying to take the nebulous out and be specific, and that you got to say
it's either way, whatever works for you.
Yeah.
You're going to be specific, you got to adhere.
Just be specific on either way.
So in this one under attendance, you're saying that they have to have 85%, and the instructor will request your withdrawal. So that sounds very hard. But now I don't know. Am I kicked out of school? And do I have any recourse? What do I get to do? And then later, you do say that you're going to let them retake a module at no extra cost. It would be really good to say that there.
Okay.
And in general, we had a bit of a quandary here that we'd sort of like agreed that we were not going to spend hours with each school going over all things with you. The last one here, and so we're going to give you a little leeway here.
Thanks.
So make sure you clearly say this makeup or not. In your leave of absence, it's always a confusion for people if they're withdrawn or on a leave, and so you use the word withdrawal in the third sentence. Proper documentation will be required to substantiate a student's withdrawal. Well, you didn't withdraw them, you let them take a leave. Withdrawal means they're gone. So, let's leave. Minor typos, well, I'll give to Ms. Stanfield and she'll pass them on. In your probation withdrawal reinstatement, that's like a very nice explanation about the retaking. It would be nice if you clearly said that they're not allowed to do makeup hours, that it's a do or die, they need to do 85% of the repeating the entire thing, because people
what
like
page
to know.
Are you on?
Page 11, sorry. I only think of the pages that I was going to talk about. So page 11 on a probation withdrawal reinstatement, if you just put in a comment about there being no makeup hours, that would be good.
Okay.
And in your EA, there's a typo, and then there's just the wording's not quite the same between the two, but you need to really relook at the whole refund policy to make sure that it's clear. Why not use the same language? That would be a good thing. Books and supplies, you just say very helpfully, books and supplies, this is on page 3 of 4 of the EA. Books and supplies are included in the total fee as noted. The only note is just saying the $200. But you're not saying when it's due, is it spread out, is it, you know, are there certain books for each module, do they get them all up front? So as noted was not very helpful other than knowing it's $200.
Okay.
And now in your business plan, I read this first and then had to go back and relook at it. You didn't number the pages, but in section 3.5, where it says regulation, it says under the OSHA laws, training and certification is to be paid by the employer. The employer must provide the training at no cost to the employee. But yet your whole program sounds like you are going to be enrolling students who are going to be taking the program and paying for themselves. So
yes.
It would behoove you to somewhere have an explanation that this your this program is offered to students who are coming in and taking it, and you might want to have some sort of a caveat that if it's through an, if they're getting through an employer, they should contact the employer so you're not breaking any rules. Having someone come in and it turns out they're really working full time for a crane company and now you get in trouble with the OSHA rules. That's all I have.
That's a good point.
I will type these up because I had to get some of their answers before I knew what to put on them. Okay. So I'll type that up.
Thank you. I do have some. the down payment section I thought was a little bit confusing because it says 25% is due. I'm on the enrollment agreement. It says 25% is due at signing of the enrollment agreement, and the remaining is due for each module, and then it talks about the balance options. And so I just think if you guys just look at that from the perspective of a consumer. Just a little bit different. So I noted that when you talked about refunds, you talk a lot about the $50 administrative fee, but in there, it's listed four times in the enrollment agreement, but three out of those four times say $50 plus the cost of books, and only one of them says the $50. So I think you want to make sure, maybe you tighten this up and only say things once too, because I agree with you. What happens, tends to happen, is if you forget to put it in multiple places, you end up with a discrepancy. So I would just try and streamline this a little bit. We already talked about the money. In your grievance procedure, you say to contact Tom, but you don't specify his title, and typically I think people, you would put that down, not just his name. It also says on number three on your student grievance that within 15 days you'll contact the student and set up an immediate face-to-face meeting. The word immediate has different connotation to different people. So I don't know, I would put in a days of time. It's within 15 days you're going to contact someone and set up an appointment within so many days.
Would it be okay instead of putting names in there if we put titles of specific individuals?
Yes, that's fine.
And also, if you're going to put the title, since you're a small company, you could say whatever the title is for designee. So if he's on vacation or breaks a leg, somebody else.
He's thinking that I'm going to retire soon. Again.
Well, there was certainly that thought, but honestly, my thought was actually having more staff. So in the event that, because you're right, we're going to need more help. We're certainly going to need help with this. If it works out at all like we think, I just didn't know it. It had to be a name or title.
Just put a title in and put or designee.
Awesome. Perfect. Handy.
That sounds a good key.
Always a caveat. That gets you out.
You need an escape clause.
On page two of your introduction, the last statement says immediately you can go into an apprentice program and be operating a crane within a month.
Yep.
My only thing is I didn't know if that sounded like a
promise
kind of thing. So I would just.
Because again, if you say that,
if they don't get in a month, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Because now they're going to come back and say, it says it right here. I don't think you need to have that in there at all.
Okay. All right. So programs, courses offered. This is the same thing I was saying earlier. I can't seem to get a picture of how the program kind of works. Like how, if I'm a student, how do I know when I'm going to class? So I was trying to figure out, you have 16 total classroom hours in intro to trade. How does that work? Is that 2.5 days? Are they going full time? Like, there's no explanation, I think, of I'm in class for 60 days or something. You know what I mean? Like, I never could figure out that picture in my mind.
I thought they'd be going 24 hours straight.
So great. You get done with class and you're falling asleep at the rig. I don't know. I'm just saying.
It did say somewhere around at 9 weeks, and I had actually noted it and then thought I was being fussy, but the two of us were confused.
Yeah, I was confused. I couldn't figure out how these worked. So that's one thing I'm always interested in. How does that program work? Okay, so I don't have anything here. I'm going as fast as I can
because I know Glenn gets dead. Okay. No, I don't. I do not, Dr. Lesh.
I'm
just crusty all the way around.
In the catalog. I'm going to buy Snickers every week. In the catalog is the same edits from the EA, so you have to make sure because a lot of that content is the same, so I just wanted to make sure that you want to duplicate that. Okay.
I tried to make sure all that was right. How's that?
Okay.
I obviously need to look at it again.
You'll have their notes.
Page 10. Page 10 is a biggie for me as an academic. This is under satisfactory academic progress. As determined by the institution, students maintain a 70% grade point average. Those who do not pass a module will be required at no cost to retake the class. The fee for NCCCO retake is the responsibility of the student.
Oh, yeah, if you
don't. So I got confused.
No, that's the exam.
That's the certification test.
But
it says at no cost.
She doesn't understand.
Yeah,
no, I think she brings up a good point. Okay. Well, yeah, no cost.
You probably want to separate that.
You don't understand the
lingo. No tuition cost, no something, whatever it is, that to me I was like,
yeah, okay. I need to separate those two.
I missed a bunch.
The grading scale is quite interesting.
Welcome to my world.
I've never seen a grading scale like this. Typically, it's in increments of equivalent. This one's all over the place, so I guess I would suggest.
Which page are you on?
This is still page 10.
Catalog 10.
Yeah, you go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this huge gap.
Yeah,
what happens if you get a 62?
Yep. Hey, I took my best shot.
Or 81 to 85 is completely missing.
Well, yeah.
Good God, I'm so used to looking at those things like that. I saw the numbers I thought should bend.
Now you like me now.
I love
you. That's my problem.
96, that's tough to get in there. Crane operating. You got to get 96.
You're wrong.
You get that 81, you're nothing.
And you can't have it. You can't have gas. If you want 80 to be 96 to 100, then and 95 to be 86, so you can beat that, but you can't have any gaps. So
you
don't have anything from 81 to 85. It's neither passing nor failing.
You mentioned the
81
retirement
to 95 is a beat. It's the eyesight.
And I would have to say it's not typical to see an ABCDU, more typical to say ABCDF. So.
But if he wants to have unsatisfactory,
okay. But they work parallel, so I know.
Gotcha.
The same. I haven't seen a grading scale like that. Okay. Conduct policy under that title, it says regarding probation, withdrawal, or reinstatement. But when you read that, I read nothing about probation, withdrawal, or reinstatement. Just conduct. So I think I don't know if you left the header on, or you need to go back and readdress the probation, withdrawal, or reinstatement, but it wasn't there.
Wow.
You and I get an F, Terry.
Yeah, we agree. Sorry.
I do this every day, too.
I mean, I just skimmed through it.
I'm glad you're saying this, because if we clarify this and clean this now, it's gold.
It'll save you a lot.
Yeah.
I would be careful under your dismissal section. You say that you can be dismissed for violations of rules and regulations of the school as set forth in publication. This will not be based on academic abilities, but will be based on behavior. But you are going to dismiss people, I'm sure, for people who can't pass modules. So I think you meant maybe that be connected to conduct, but dismissal typically is academic and behavior, so you might want to address that.
I think that sounds out.
I would say there would be no consideration of previous credits. There will be no consideration of previous classes or experience a student has outside of Liberty Crane School, because you already said that you would take... they could leave and come back, and you would take your own stuff somewhere. Remember that somewhere.
The probation, withdrawal, and reinstatement is a separate section. You have a whole separate section on that, so you listed that title in two different places.
Where is it?
On page 10 and page 11. So just make sure the right thing's on the right hand.
Yeah.
Done.
Thank you.
Can I make a suggestion? Because they are new, and this is really a lot of changes, so we have the option of either asking them to make these changes and then we look at it and say it's good, or you want to have it come back.
I was going to ask the same question to the board. I'm kind of on the fence here. There is a whole bunch that needs to be done to this catalog in certain areas still, so... I guess the questions on the table is, do we say approve contingent upon them resubmitting and then re-reviewing and
by these two.
By these two, or do we postpone and have them come back?
That's all the way to August.
It might be faster.
Tom's real good at turning stuff.
I don't want to do that, Tom. I'm just saying I want to ask the opinion of the board.
I think if you designate one or two board members to review with Terry, I think that might be... quicker for the applicants.
Yeah.
Is that like that's not it?
You know what a good proof for your
Craig was trying to say Jim and Glenn was leaving.
Jim's going on vacation. We turned
out. Okay.
That's why I left the door open.
I have one question that I meant to ask you. Residency. Do we
have to prove residency when we accept someone?
Is it our responsibility?
Is that our responsibility?
That's not me.
Is it going to be a condition of the certification?
And there's not Title IV funding.
Could it? Do they have to be a resident to be certified?
Yeah, so no,
to pass the test.
We don't certify, so.
No, I know, but it,
does the certification
require to go to be?
No, then you don't have to.
No, in fact, the certification is actually recognized in several countries.
No, you're fine.
Because we actually had that with the nursing thing. A student went through with nursing and could not get certified for nursing and empty bounces were made, so.
Yeah, plus if it's Title IV, though, like, then they have to have Sarah and all that stuff.
Citizenship the same.
Yeah, that's not
it's, yeah, it's just if you're saying that this program prepares them for going to sit for the certification test, and then they get there and find out that you didn't tell them they had to be a citizen, then
they don't.
You just have to make sure you're aligned with your certification or making sure that you're preparing. Yeah.
Okay. Hearing no more questions, I hope. Let's move on. I make a motion that we approve the original conditional non-accredited vocational license for Liberty Crane School with the following stipulations and before the license is to be released, and that is they submit a catalog with the numerous revisions that are needed, as well as the enrollment agreement changes, and the maintaining of the $15,000 surety bond and the updating of the insurance certification.
And to be clear, are we designating specific board members to review that submission?
Well,
or would you like to have it come back before the board?
No, because like you said, that takes us all the way to August. So I don't know. Are you guys willing to do that? I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, but it's the enrollment agreement and the calendar.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why I said
enrollment.
I can do the insurance certificate. I can look at a date. Sometimes.
Okay. Can I amend my motion? Well, I haven't noticed that. I'd also add that I would like to see at least a mock-up of your marketing materials as well, please.
All right.
All right.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Do you agree with the bond and for submitting the catalog and enrollment agreement updated?
Yep.
We have a motion and second. No further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And motion carries.
Congratulations and thank you.
And hope for the
So you're not licensed yet. All right, next, a call to the public. There's no public hearing. Do you want to be the public for a moment?
Could we help in some way?
It's the only benefit of long meetings. There's never any public
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Peace out.
Board business.
Tucson College has closed and we have received all of their records and now they're left 400 boxes.
So let me take a real quick update.
Yeah.
So there's 2.1 million documents in that building.
Is that all?
2.1 million.
And each and every single document has to be touched by somebody in order to find out if it's something that we need or we need to throw away. And just as we just completed ITT, we have 592 more boxes that we have.
Kevin's got a job for life.
Tucson College has probably about 450 boxes. My personal thing is just kind of keep that in mind as we look at when these schools close down. It's not a one-time strife hit for the student that comes in and it needs to be made whole.
Right.
It's also a lifetime of giving and taking from our fund at a burn rate of about $15,000, $17,000 a month to keep those records in storage and sort them. Get rid of the documents, and we haven't even talked about
scanning and putting them in the format. So.
And you have to properly, you know, get rid of them. You can't throw them away.
We have to shred everyone. To shred. So everything.
And that costs so it's the truck to come pick them up and shred them.
Nothing's free in this world.
No, nothing is free. Senate Bill 1293 was signed by the governor, so it'll go into effect, I think, after June 9th, the 40 hours and $1,000. And I think everything else is on here.
Have a complaint committee, a finance committee next month.
Oh, thank you. We will have, finance committee.
23rd.
No, it is
22nd.
June 22nd.
All right,
okay.
I was out of town.
We'll have complaint and finance. I know there is not a board, but I may have to have a special teleconference for those of you who are not on committees for a cap that needs to get through the government
before we have one applicant. So the finance committee and the complaint committee will be there.
In between them, we'll ask you
to call in. And we may have form without you calling in.
They'll need four. I mean, it's an application that should be fairly straightforward because it was for an online services center, but the push is that it could have a substantial number of jobs brought to Arizona, so to dilly-dally around, we got real cool.
Cool.
For some people.
Okay. I
got to
go.
Bye.
Thanks, Clay.
Yes.
Thanks, Clay. All right, so... Anything else?
No.
The meeting is adjourned at
10:30.
I think so.
Dot.